Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. This fall's crop of college freshmen needn't fret if they were turned down by a more prestigious institution of higher learning. Here to console and then take us to school, Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, Frank, you're joining us, as always, from prestigious Princeton, New Jersey. Now, what's the caveat in reaching for the Ivy League?
Well, it's a very interesting study that we've started conducting in conjunction with Purdue University, where we interview college graduates, large numbers of college graduates, and then ask them questions about their well-being and their engagement at work, and then we ask them where they went to college. And we do the correlations. And the bottom line is, although it's a complex study, is it doesn't seem to matter as much the type of school that you went to, that is those that are rated high by U.S. News and World Report, for example, versus those that aren't, public versus private and so forth. What matters is what happens when you're at college. So the headline is not where you go to school, but what you do while you're there seems to be what's important in today's college environment.
Well-being sounds like a pretty broad spectrum. How is it defined?
Well, we have a very complex way of describing that. Gallup with HealthWays over the last 5 or 7 years have developed a well-being index, which includes things like how are you feeling about your life in general these days on a scale of 1 to 10? Did you feel anger yesterday, happiness yesterday, and so on and so forth? And engagement at work is a series of questions we have about how involved you are with the purpose of your place at work. What we find really relates to those variables, Dave, again, is things like I had a mentor who encouraged my hopes and dreams while in college. I had professors who cared about me. I had at least one professor who made me excited about learning. Those are the things that seem to relate to those positive outcomes rather than just the brand name of the school you went to.
To be clear, this study shows that there is literally no edge for highly selective schools?
That's right. Now, we have broad categories of schools. We have about 30,000 interviews so far, and we're expanding that. So we're talking about those that are in the top 100 of U.S. News versus those that aren't. And there are thousands and thousands of colleges, of course. But to go to one of the higher-ranked schools compared to not going to one of those doesn't seem to matter. Now, there are many different factors, Dave, so let's be clear that there's a lot going on when you choose a college. But I think these are some very important results.
Now, Frank, once that college grad is gainfully employed and presumably working to make a good impression, what's to be gained and what's to be lost from devoting extra hours to checking and responding to emails?
Well, there probably is a lot to be gained for those of us, and I'm guilty of this, or I'm happy to do it, I should say, in case my employers are listening, to spend lots and lots of time outside of normal business hours on email and working remotely. But what our analysts have told us based on some recent research is that actually is correlated with higher levels of stress. So you may be doing better at your job, but you also have higher stress. Let me give you an example. People who never check email outside of work, 36% told us that they experienced a lot of stress yesterday. People who do the checking of emails quite frequently, it's significantly higher, over 40% who say they had stress yesterday. So clearly there's a relationship from both checking emails and the number of hours you'd spend working remotely and your stress level.
Is it possible to extrapolate that blue-collar jobs as an aggregate are less stressful than white-collar jobs, which on the face of it might require more checking and responding to emails?
You know, that's a good question, Dave. Certainly, you're right. A lot of blue-collar jobs, it wouldn't make any sense to be checking remotely in, you know, when you're outside of work because you're there and you work and you go home and you're not working. So that would be an extrapolation that might make some sense. The broader conclusion simply is that those of us who spend a lot of time outside of normal hours doing work have higher levels of stress.
And then looking beyond school, how are job prospects right now?
Well, job creation, as we measure, is looking more positive, and that's a good thing. We ask workers all over the country every night, is your place of employment hiring or is it firing? And then we compute a job creation index. In other words, we're using workers, Dave, as our little Sherlock Holmes detectives out there in the workplaces to tell us what's going on. And that index has been going up for the month of April. It was as high as it's been at any point going back to when we started measuring it, which was back in 08. So although it's not highly rosy at the moment, certainly it looks like to us that more firms are hiring than has been the case over the last number of years.
Frank, were you able to tease out specifically what those jobs were paying?
That's a very good question, Dave, and we do not in this analysis. So your point's well taken. There may be more jobs being created, but they may be low-paying or minimum wage jobs, which certainly isn't as optimal as if they were higher-paying jobs. We just don't have that in this analysis. All we know is more companies are hiring and fewer are firing than has been the case at any point going back through 2008.
Let's look to Washington, where our lawmakers are always hard at work. I understand the Tea Party suffered a bit of a setback this week.
Well, that's how it's being perceived. We're talking here specifically about the Republican primary in North Carolina, where the candidate who is perceived as being backed by the Tea Party lost, and the candidate who is established, the establishment candidate, as it was perceived, won without a runoff, and he'll be running against the incumbent Democratic Senator Kay Hagan come in November. So it was perceived as a loss for the Tea Party. We're finding overall, compared to 2010, and that's a good comparison, because 2010 is when the Tea Party really came into its own in those midterm elections. We're finding now that support for the Tea Party is down, opposition is up, and crucially, Dave, among Republicans, about a third fewer now say they are supporters of the Tea Party than was the case in November of 2010.
Would you describe it more as a steady erosion since that high mark in 2010, or has it been volatile?
It's been volatile. It's gone up and down, and we've done several surveys since last fall where it's been roughly constant, although opposition in this survey is higher than we've seen it. So it seems to have steadied in now, and let me get some numbers on this. About 22% of Americans say they're supporters of the Tea Party, and if we isolate just Republicans, which is where it really matters, it's about 41%. So more than half of even Republicans tell us that it's not necessarily that they're opponents of the Tea Party, but they're simply not supporters of it.
I'm curious, what percentage of Democrats say they support the Tea Party?
It's very low, although there is a small percent of Democrats who do support it and a little higher percent of independents. But what's interesting is within the Republican Party, it's very ideologically based. I look very carefully at demographics. Is it old people, young people, people in the South? That doesn't seem to matter. What really drives your support for the Tea Party is if you're ideologically very conservative. So in our view, being a supporter of the Tea Party is another way of saying you're a conservative Republican.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.